The following program is created for informational purposes only and does not constitute as medical advice. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the host. If you think you may have a medical emergency, consult your doctor.
This is where the healing begins.
This is Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne of Greenwood Family Chiropractic, where it's not only about neck and back pain, but a place for whole body wellness. Listen this hour as Dr. Leanne is here to share her wellness education to help you live a maximized life. For more information, visit GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com. Here's Dr. Leanne.
Good morning. If you're tuning in, you're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com, that's greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com, to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today, we are talking about sleep. It has been a common topic that patients have asked me about in the office. Now, here's the thing too. Oh, this is great. I want you all to know, if you're listening right now and there is a topic that we've not touched base on that you'd like to hear more about, you can shoot an email or give us a call. So our email is just info@greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. And you could say, hey, I was wondering a little bit more about this or that. And we can figure out how we can integrate that in a little bit better. So I thought it was just a really good idea to be like, hey, here's what we can do. So when we talk about sleep, there has been a lot of just questions and concerns, more so about sleep and what we can do for that. And so, you know, obviously, we at Greenwood Family Chiropractic don't treat sleep disorders. We don't treat disease processes. We treat musculoskeletal. Though that being said, with more education that I've gone through FMU, which is Functional Medicine University, just learning and knowing more allows us to integrate more on what we can do and how we have the ability to help people. And that's when we look at more of that whole body wellness, it's, you know, obviously part, right? Like the chiropractic part of that is like, oh, I sleep and my hand goes numb and my hip hurts and all of those things that aches and pains. But when we think about the body's ability to function and heal, that's what really chiropractic is about and what we do. So we're going to talk about that. But before we dive down deep into that, let's talk about some news.
Dr. Leanne's Health News.
Some studies suggest that too much sugar can literally mess with the brain.
Health News Now, one of the world's most commonly prescribed medications.
Maybe today, the average American consumes 22 teaspoons of sugar a day.
Protesters say they just should not be forced to get this shot, not by the government.
Today's Health in the News. Do women need more sleep than men? Here's what experts think. So obviously sleep is important for everyone, but do women require more than men? This has been an ongoing discussion among researchers and medical experts as they weigh the various biological factors that come into play. So sleep expert Dr. Wendy Troxell, who is a senior behavior specialist, licensed clinical psychologist, said the idea that women need significantly more than men is often overstated. Research has shown that the difference between men and women is rather minimal, as women only need about 11 to 13 more minutes of sleep. So this exaggeration can pressure women to focus on hitting a specific number of sleep hours, potentially at the risk of sleep quality. Let me finish going and then I'm going to give you my personal doctor mom take on this as a female who has a husband. They say women do tend to sleep more than men, about 10 to 20 more minutes per night. However, we don't know for certain it's because women need more sleep or because men don't sleep enough. If the reason is that women need more sleep, hormones are very likely to play an important factor. Agreed. So as women face about twice the risk of depression as men, it's especially important for them to maintain healthy sleep schedules to support their mental health and well-being. More broadly, sleep quality can support brain health, relationship health, and other physical health, including reducing the risk of heart disease. Proper sleep can also help women better manage stress, maintain a healthy weight, and boost immune system. So they ask, how much sleep is enough? So sleep duration is very dependent on the individual, says the doctor. So getting enough sleep that you feel rested and refreshed. Too many people focus on the specific amount of sleep needed and not how they feel after they wake up. As a general rule of thumb, women can aim for about 7.5 hours of sleep per night. It's hard to pinpoint exactly how much more sleep a woman may need in compared to men, as there are many different factors that can influence quality of sleep, like stress levels, sleep hygiene habits, exercise, diet, alcohol. If you have better quality of sleep, you may need closer to 7 hours versus a person who has poorer quality sleep. They may need closer to 9. They talk about sleep challenges affecting women. Women face more frequent hormonal changes, which Troxell said can lead to fragmented sleep and a higher risk of insomnia, especially during menstrual cycles, pregnancy, and menopause. So around 60% of women's sleep disturbances during menopause transition, yet these symptoms often go untreated. So 60% of women experience sleep disturbances. That's like basically every single one. And I feel like the other 40% is probably lying. In the second half of menstrual cycle, or your luteal phase, progesterone levels rise, which can make women feel sleepier and may lead to poor quality of sleep. So pregnant women have a harder time falling asleep and staying asleep, which leads them to feel tired throughout the day. Everything makes you feel tired throughout the day when you're pregnant. Poor sleep's just part of it, right? The fact that you're like growing organ systems and an entire other human being, maybe that's part of it too. There's also an increase for obstructive sleep apnea and restless leg during pregnancy. So they go on to talk about that. Here's what I think about a lot. And I'll give you some tools that we can talk about. But I have an Oura Ring. So it tracks my sleep. Tracks from time in bed to time actually asleep to resting heart rate to the different sleep cycles, REM, deep sleep. And what is interesting, especially, my brain can't wrap my brain around life before being pregnant and kid because you know, it was pushing a decade ago now at this point. But ever since I was pregnant the first time, you know, yes, you're uncomfortable and you have hormones. I saw this funny little meme that said, sleep disturbances start at approximately 8 weeks of pregnancy and last until you die. Oh, I feel that in my soul. But that being said, I mean, I used to be a relatively good sleeper. And then, you know, just the obviously the more pregnant that you become, the harder it is because there's just pressure on your bladder. You double your blood volume while you're pregnant. And that actually starts beginning 6 to 7 weeks of pregnancy. So hence the increased urination in that gestation. You're obviously not having pressure on your bladder from the baby, but the fact that your kidneys have to filter this blood and you have double the amount of blood volume, that's the increase in urination. So I think those aspects of things, but then too, now you have this reticular activating system where your brain is constantly on high alert to hear your baby. And so my husband can sleep through like doors slamming, kids crying. Like, I would be like an atomic bomb. And he's just like, yeah. If he's snoring and I will gently move him with my foot, not a kick, but we will call that a gentle move. if that gentle moves several times and happens more aggressively, he sleeps through it. And I'm like, how? How are you like that? I can hear a mouse fart on the other side of the house and I'm up for hours. And I'm like, how do you just live through all of this? So I think what, and I can see this, I can track the data with my Oura Ring, is that I might be in bed for 8 hours, but if I'm awake for that time, that's not sleep. And so you might say, I go to bed as a female, right? You might say, I go to bed at 10 o'clock and you get up at 6 a.m. That would allude that you got 8 hours of sleep, but that's not 8 hours of sleep. That's 8 hours in bed. And so I especially too, when we start looking at perimenopause through menopause, you know, there is that aspect where there is discongruency when it comes to like total sleep. So when I see this, it's like women need 11 to 13 minutes more. And maybe that's of total sleep, but that's assuming the average individual is like, is likely not tracking their sleep to the extent maybe of someone who has an Oura Ring, who wants to look at that data, who needs to see a little bit more. But I have found for myself, on average, when I started tracking a couple years ago, I would get about 6 to 6.5 hours of sleep. And where my body hit a sweet spot was more when I did reach about 7.5 hours of sleep, not time in bed, of actual sleep. And that in and of itself became a little bit harder, but made me more conscious of sleep itself and not just time in bed. So I thought that was really interesting. But there are better sleep hygiene practices that we can do to help improve your sleep. And we'll talk more about that next.
You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. We're online with life-changing results and success stories at greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. Videos, tips, deals, and more. Find Greenwood Family Chiropractic on Instagram. Here's Dr. Leanne.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. May all your Yuletide dreams come true.
Welcome back. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today, we are talking about how to improve sleep. Sleep hygiene, if you will. There has been a moderate amount of questions that I have received in the office about sleep and how to improve that. And truly, I will say the importance of sleep. You know, we could talk about just a plethora of why you need a proper amount of sleep. But I feel like anyone who is sleep deprived would absolutely know that. I'll never forget watching a Dateline. Gosh, it was probably 20 years ago, something crazy. But they had these driving simulators that they would have drunks, right? Like, this is how you would drive after one glass of wine or after one beer. And here's how you drive after two drinks and three drinks. And then they took someone who was tired and put them behind the wheel. And they drove worse than the drunk drivers. I'll never forget it. I was like, oh my gosh, I couldn't have been more than like in my early 20s maybe when I had seen it. But I was just like, oh goodness. You know, like you know what that feels like and how your body just wants to like shut down when you're overtired. I feel like especially if you have any children under the age of like 18 months, you're probably in the thick of it right now. Listen, my kids are a little bit older. They're not really old. I still have us. Single digit aged children. But that being said, you know, there was another, gosh, I'm telling you all these statistics. I don't remember any of the research, but it was very interesting that sleep patterns, normalized sleep patterns, don't return until a child is 7 years old. Like, this is for parents, not for children. And I was like, that's about right, I feel like, right? Like 7 years old is probably second grade. And so at that point in time, they're doing a little bit more, but gosh, even having a younger one, it's still there. So these recommendations are just going to help you get better sleep when you're not being woke up by your small children. But, you know, there's a reason why different militaries will use sleep deprivation as a like a hostage technique, you know, a torture technique is lack of sleep. And you're like, I just chose to do it a couple times in the form of children. Oh man, I laugh, but I did do it a couple times. I think you just like forget, right? The pain and the sleep, and they're worth it, but goodness gracious. So let's talk about some ways to really proactively, some things that you can do to help get to sleep, some things that you can help do to stay asleep, some actionable steps. And I will tell you that I have known these, but they really don't work unless you use them, right? I think sometimes we're like, oh, it's not a big deal, it's not going to have an effect. But then when we don't actively utilize these techniques, that's where, from a sleep standpoint, you could very much be doing better. I think one thing that we can talk about that is very important for sleep is regularity. What does regularity mean? That means that you go to bed and wake up at the same time every day. So consistency of sleep helps anchor your sleep and helps improve its quantity and its quality. So what I say when I mean when I say that is that we have like standard bedtimes during the week, right? So we think about, you know, maybe you go to bed at 9:30. During the week, because you know you have to get up early for work. And then on Friday and Saturday, you're like, hey, I get to sleep in. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stay up until midnight, but I get, instead of getting up at 6, I get to get up at 9. And we think it's like this great thing, but our bodies don't understand that it's a Friday or Saturday. It knows I like to go to bed at 9:30 to 10 and I get up at 6. So those are ones from a quality and quantity of sleep. I think that's really important, trying to have that same window. Now, what that means is that on Fridays and Saturdays, we just try to do like dinners a little bit earlier, right? Like we try to move things up a little bit more. So, you know, there's an outlier. I can't say that I'm perfect in this. Like my girlfriends and I went to a Christian concert not too long ago. And, you know, we didn't get home until 11:30. And so that's very much later than my standard bedtime. I think when we have that change, I think one of the things that is harder to do, but also what is somewhat necessary, is that I think sometimes we make behavioral adjustments if we don't have a great night of sleep. So if you've gone to bed late, if you had to get up too early, if you've just had a poor night's sleep, what we'll often try to do is we'll try to compensate by sleeping in, by napping, by the overconsumption of coffee or caffeine. And so that is one that will also, you know, like say you don't go to bed till midnight, you wake up at your regular time. So you take a, you know, 2 hour nap in the middle of the day. And that's where it's hard to then get back on track to be like, you took a 2 hour nap. Now you're not tired at 9:30 to go to bed at your average time. So regularity is very important. Consistency of the time that you go to bed and the time that you wake, but as well, not trying to compensate for not a great night of sleep. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Maximize Your Life. Now let's talk about getting to sleep. This is one where, from a melatonin standpoint, we want to do things that will naturally increase our melatonin. Part of that actually starts when you wake up, is getting natural sunshine in your eyes. So you've got to think, like, as the average individual, you might get up in the morning, we turn on our lights to our bathroom, we leave the house, we drive to work, we sit in an office, we go home. By the time we go home, depending on what time of year it is, if the days are longer or shorter, you know, it might be dark when you go into work and it might be dark when you come home. And then we have synthetic lights, like, or the artificial lights, I should say. And then we sit in front of a screen, albeit throughout the day, computers, laptops, phones. We go home, we have the TV, we have our phones, we have whatever, iPads. And then we try to tell our body, hey, it's time to go to bed. And your body's like, I don't have a circadian rhythm. Like, I don't know what time of day it is. I don't know where we're at. You're thrusting me awake. You're thrusting me asleep. I've never seen the light of day. And so even if it's overcast, right? So if that means it's cold or if it's cloudy, there are still going to be natural UV rays that you can get. So this is one where get outside in the morning. If you can't do it in the morning, try to do it at lunch. Take off your sunglasses. Drive to work without your sunglasses. You're not necessarily going to get the UV light through your car, but part of that morning sunshine tells our body that it is daytime. This is the circadian rhythm. And then when we get home, you have to think, right? Like, back in the day, they didn't have overhead lighting. They didn't have LED lights. And so in the evening, when the sun would go down, they would have candles, or, right, they'd have the fire or this red light that would help their body say, guess what? It's time to go to bed. We're winding down. But yet now we have TV, we've got all these screens, we've got the artificial light that it's just as bright as it was at, you know, 7 a.m. when you are getting ready for work is 7 p.m. when the sun has started to set. You're supposed to start getting tired, but we're blasting with all these different lights, the blue lights, the screens, that your body is not like, hey, I think it's time to go to bed. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, it's 11 o'clock. Gosh, I should go to bed. I've got to get up early. We turn all the lights off and we just lay there and we're like, why can't we go to sleep? And you're like, you've not allowed your body to produce any of the natural melatonin that it needs to start getting tired, right? Melatonin is what helps you get to sleep and stay asleep. So when we're looking at kind of that darkness, I think dimming the lights, we had a flood in our downstairs a couple years back, and it was so important to me that I had dimmer switch lights in our house. And so those are ones the kids want it as bright as all can be after dinner. And I'm like, no, we turn the lights down to where it's this very low hue. I don't want that. I think the other thing too, because that's the dim lights, at least an hour before you go to bed, help stimulate melatonin production, like enhancing its onset so your body can feel a little bit more tired. Cutting out your blue lights as well, at least an hour before bedtime. So that means no screens. You know, your phones do have a dim setting that you can put on. You can put on blue light blockers. They almost look like sunglasses-esque, if you will. But the whole entire design is to filter that blue light from getting to your brain. And so then that way, and you can use those not just in the evenings, but especially during the day. If you're an individual who works on computers or screens, you can actually use those and utilize those blue light blockers in order to cut out more of that. So your body can be like, oh goodness, yep, now is time to start winding down. And like, you have to do that to your body as an adult, not just your children when they're like trying to run marathons 10 minutes before they go to bed. And you're like, no, guess what? There's other aspects to be able to better utilize with that. So just an aspect of being able to really hone in on that natural production of melatonin right before you go to bed. Reading a book is really great. I also got my kids, I think they were like maybe $10 on like Amazon, reading lights that you can push a couple times. The first one is this really bright white light. You push it two more times and it's this very dim yellow light. And so again, it just kind of gives more of that relaxation and whatnot. So I've got more tips and tricks about supplementation or what to only do while you're in bed next.
You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. We're online with life-changing results and success stories at GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com. This is Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne of Greenwood Family Chiropractic. To schedule an appointment, visit GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know. Where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Welcome back. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853. 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. So today we are talking about sleep, how to get better sleep, good sleep hygiene. And one of the things I talked about before we went on break was sleeping with screens and how it is highly discouraged to sleep with screens. But I thought this, I had remembered that I didn't talk about. There was a research article that came out. It talks about sleeping with lights on may increase diabetes risk. So I think this is wildly interesting. Exposure to artificial light at night is widespread globally and it's linked to negative effects on health and well-being. So they looked at a research study that is artificial light at night. It's an Allen study. And it looked at glucose metabolism and insulin resistance compared with dim light exposure. And so scientists took 20 adults from a 3-day, 2-night laboratory stay. And a week before the study, they measured the participants' habits and sleep diaries. So they're randomly chosen to one of two sleep conditions. One was a room light condition. So participants slept with dim light of less than 3 lux on the first night and an overhead room light on at 100 lux for the second night, or they were in a dim light sleeping with less than 3 lux on for both nights. So on days 1 and day 2, the experiments, the participants provided blood samples before and after food intake to assess melatonin and blood glucose levels. And then they also underwent testing to assess their quality of sleep. So the participants also filled out surveys every 2 hours that they were awake to evaluate their subjective sleepiness, hunger, and mood changes. So meanwhile, nurses collected blood pressure reading every hour alongside heart rate every 4 hours. And so the researchers found that exposure to a light, to a single night of 100, so a bright room, increased heart rate during sleep and insulin resistance in the following morning. And so they said, basically, they think it's the light can affect the circadian rhythm and affects melatonin secretion, but then autonomic nervous system, which is the relationship between heart rate variability, insulin resistance. So they thought it was very interesting that there was a correlation for an increase in insulin resistance. So those are ones where like a bad night's sleep can have an effect on quite a bit of the body. So one thing that I think my husband really gets excited about when I was going through all of this and learning more about sleep is that temperature is very important. So in order for sleep regulation to happen appropriately to fall asleep, your core body temperature must decrease by approximately 2 to 3 degrees Fahrenheit. So keeping your bedroom cool around 67 degrees. And here's something kind of interesting too that I learned about is that taking a warm bath or shower before bedtime is scientifically supported method to improve your ability to fall asleep and sleep deeply. Initially, the water raises your core body temperature, but what it does is subsequently forces your body to cool off inside. So although like the outer surface of your body might become hotter during a bath or a shower, it actually decreases your core body temperature. And so that's one where like warmth before bed is actually a really good thing because it helps cool. It forces your body to cool that temperature. When you look at caffeine, I will say that I believe caffeine's half-life is about 8 hours. So the recommendation is typically no caffeine 8 to 10 hours before bedtime. So this is one where my poor husband, but like from a sleep aspect, I personally will not drink caffeine after, and this, I'm talking about coffee. I'm not talking like I'll have green tea or, you know, like a low chocolate or something like that. I'm not talking about low levels of caffeine. I'm talking about coffee, full blown caffeinated, put it directly into my veins type of black coffee. I will not do after 11 a.m. That is a personal preference. I don't feel like I'm very sensitive to caffeine, though. That being said, I do note if I do like a 2 or 3 p.m. coffee, my quality of sleep is definitely not the same. So I feel like that is quite noteworthy. So those are ones where oftentimes people want to get into the habit of doing like a after lunch coffee because they have that crash. I would bring you back to the show that I did about coffee and caffeine. Oftentimes, if you wait 60 to 90 minutes following the time that you wake up, it allows for adenosine to wear off. Adenosine is a chemical that promotes sleepiness. This is what works a little bit, lessens that caffeine crash midday. So I choose to not drink coffee for the first 60 to 90 minutes following when I wake up. Because it just lessens that midday caffeine crash. But then too, I've noticed some of that caffeine crash is midday dehydration too. So those are always ones to pay attention and to be mindful of. I did a college paper about alcohol. I know that alcohol, although it is a sedative, it's not a sleep aid. And this is very interesting. I have always been pretty transparent about my, I like red wine, right? And, but that being said, if I have a glass or two of red wine in the evening, I have noticed that my quality of sleep is, most definitely affected. I can, again, I track that with the Oura Ring, so you can have different tracking devices that you look at from a sleep aspect. Though that being said, it also makes my heart rate variability. Heart rate variability is the variable time in between heartbeats. The higher the score, the better. The lower the score typically is an indication of stressed, overtraining. And so if I have a glass or two of wine in the evening, I will notice that overnight my heart rate variability, it suffers. It suffers quite a bit. It also can cause more of the increase in heart rate, which if sometimes people wake up and they feel like their heart is racing after they've had alcohol, this is the reason why. And it also can cause more fragmented sleep. So it's just that break overall. Now, if you have, and if you're a napper, I will say 20 to 30 minutes is nap short. There's a lot of research that has been posted about the timing of naps. There is quite a bit of research about the difference in sleep cycles. So what oftentimes happens is that you get into a deeper sleep cycle when you get to the over 30 minutes of sleep. And so that's where, in order to feel rested, in those, like REM sleep, for example, you would need a certain amount of sleep. And because you're cutting that short, that's where oftentimes people say, I'm not a good napper. And it's because they're reaching that sleep that needs hours in order to feel rested, versus when you have those lighter sleeps, that's where you get, I call them power naps. My power naps, if I can get 15, 20 minutes in, I will wake up, I will feel rested, I will feel fresh, I will feel more mentally sharp. But the problem is when people are taking 90 minutes, an hour and a half to 2 hour naps, that's why they don't ever really feel as rested as they could or should. So be very mindful of naps. So one of the things I want to talk about of what to do and not to do in bed is, and this is all when you talk about like brain and how the brain works and how the brain functions, is that one of the things that you can do is there are only two things that you should be doing in bed. So sometimes we like want to be like, oh, let me get a little bit of work done, or I'm going to scroll on my phone, or I'm going to have a snack, or I'm going to watch TV in bed. There are two things that you should do in bed, and that's sleep and sex. That's it. That's all you do. Keep it for that. Because then when your brain, you kind of condition your brain to associate your bed with those two things. And those two things are very helpful for reducing insomnia and improving very much the quality of sleep that you can get. Now, when we talk about things that you can take to help improve this, now, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne. So you can look at different supplements, right? One of the things that I think can be very helpful is magnesium. I prefer magnesium glycinate. There's different types. Magnesium will never stand alone. That's why you'll see different types of magnesium. Magnesium glycinate is teamed up with glycine. Glycine is an amino acid that helps increase GABA, which is more of a relaxation aspect in your body. How much is very much dependent on the person. You can start with 200 to 400 milligrams of magnesium glycinate. I have found very... if I take my vitamins at night before I go to bed, I will... If I take magnesium before I go to bed, I sleep better almost every single time. I'll never forget, it was years ago, my mom had come over to my house and she was spending the night, and I had given her some vitamins. It's like, do you take your vitamins today? She's like, no. So I gave her her vitamins, and she woke up the next morning and she goes, what did you give me? And I was like, what do you mean? Why? What happened? Like, is it bad? And she goes, that is the best I have slept in years. And I need to know what you gave me. And it was just magnesium. And so my mom now does magnesium before she goes to bed almost every single night. And I think it's great. Magnesium is needed in 300 different cell cycles. So that's one. You can also look at GABA is another one that you can take. GABA is what that looks like when you see it. But then too, taurine is another one that you can take before bed. You know, melatonin is a hormone. I think it's interesting. Melatonin, I was doing some advanced certification, and we were talking about melatonin. And although it's not something that I would want to necessarily take every day or long term, what I thought was really interesting is I was talking to another practitioner advisor about melatonin. And I'm like, you know, I really work on not taking melatonin often. And she said, why? And I said, because I don't want to like become immune to it. She goes, I don't know where everyone came up with this, but it is not a negative feedback loop. So it's not necessarily one that your body will stop making or become immune to and have to take more of. So it's just one of those, kind of one of those aspects overall that you're like, yes, you can use it all the time, but I always wonder like, why we need it as much as we possibly do, right? So those are just some of the aspects. Now, some of the questions that I have received, more so about sleeping, is pillows and snoring. Now, from a pillow aspect, the best sleep position that you can have is on your back. On your back is one of the best ones. We supply our patients with sleep aids. So they are lumbar and cervical sleep aids for you to lay on. They're almost like circular discs to help open up that curvature. You can always try to get support pillows. It just kind of depends on, but on your back's the best. Now, I often get people who ask more about snoring. Snoring is so unique to each individual in terms of positioning. You know, if someone has like larger adenoids or tonsils, there's a lot of like gimmicks that you can have. Sometimes people, when they lay on their back, it resolves their snoring. I have other patients when they lay on their back, it worsens their snoring. And the question to that is why? And the answer to that is, I don't know. I don't know. You know, my husband, I have noticed if he's on a weird position on his back, I'll kick him to wake him up, to roll him over. If he is overtired, he snores. If he's overtired, I don't kick him. I would like to give him some grace and some good sleep. So that's just always a hard, it's so hard. You know, you can do the nose breathe strips that kind of opens up the nose a little bit more. There's just so many aspects of like what it is. I will say, if you are a side sleeper, right, what my best recommendation is to either have someone take or kind of feel that your nose, sternum, belly button, and knees should all be in line, right? Should all be in line. So that way that you're not like head is cocked up, pelvis is rotated, knees are, you know, at the same. So those are ones, if you can make it more neutral for a spine, that's really good. I think it's just paying attention to that sleep position. But, you know, a lot of the times what I see is like a chiropractor is that people are tossing and turning because they're not comfortable. They're not comfortable because they're subluxated, their spine's not in the proper alignment. You know, so it's one of those where you're like, you should get adjusted, one, for health and healing, but then two, you know, numbness and tingling is your body's biggest warning sign. So if you're sleeping on your side and you're like, oh, my hands go numb, your body is actively trying to wake you up to get pressure off of a nerve. And those nerves inevitably serve vital organ systems, heart, lungs, stomach, digestion, thyroid. You know, people wake up with headaches. Why? Because you're poking a sleeping bear. Your spine is misaligned, and the way that you're sleeping, it's not a new pillow, it's not a new mattress. Your back hurts because your back needs to be adjusted. The bones aren't where they're supposed to be. You can do the $1,000 mattress, you can do the $100 pillow, but there's a reason inevitably why that's all happening. And if you don't get down to that root cause, then we've got to figure out a little bit more from that aspect of things. So, you know, the answer to that is come in and get adjusted. Oh, we also have a sleep and mood that I love. It has 5-HTP. It's got melatonin. It's got a couple amino acids like tyrosine that helps sleep. So there's just a lot of aspects. Sleep and mood is kind of one of my absolute favorites. So, but you can get adjusted too. Come in and check us out. Greenwood Family Chiropractic. 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Look forward to next week, but always remember that your power is on.